Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, April 2nd, 2012. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. Today's show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can get your copy of the 7-step roadmap to publishing success, now available at www.abookin90days.com. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Why Revision is Critical to Your Writing Success, with my guest, author and writing teacher, Darcy Pattison. But first, I want to welcome all of you, my listeners. Now, whether you're listening live on the phone, or perhaps you're on the website, in the chat room, there are some of you there, and many of you are listening to this show from our archives after the fact. In any case, I'm so honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. Now, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. Tell other people about it who can benefit. Thanks to modern technology, it's very easy to do that. One of the easiest things to do is go to my show page at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown. And there, right under my photo, you will see several ways to follow me and keep up with the show. If you click the follow button, you will get an announcement and a reminder each week in your email of the upcoming episodes. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Each week, I interview guests from many different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, you name it. We talk about all those things which contribute to lasting happiness. Today's episode is Why Revision is Critical to Your Writing Success with my guest, Darcy Pattison, author and writing teacher who has been published in 8 languages. Her recent books include children's nature books, Wisdom, The Midway Albatross, and Prairie Storms. Coming soon in August is Desert Baths. I was about to say dessert. Desert Baths. She travels the U.S. teaching the Novel Revision Retreat using her workbook, Novel Metamorphosis, Uncommon Ways to Revise. She's also authored the book, How to Write a Children's Picture Book. She blogs about the process of writing at Fiction Notes. And you can find out about that at darcypattison.com. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today Darcy Pattison. Hi, Darcy.
Hi. It's great to be here today.
Thank you so much for making time to join us. This is an extremely important part of the writing process. This is why I wanted to have you share, and you have an excellent approach to it. So let's get started right away, because writers often resist revision because they're already writing better than anyone else they know. So they may think they don't need to revise. Why should
it's
a
true.
Writer revise?
Well, you must revise because competition is really, really fierce these days, and getting fiercer. More and more people are attracted to writing because of the ease of computer word processing programs, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So a publishing house may get, in a year, 10,000 submissions, mm-hmm. out of which they can publish 50. And out mm-hmm. of those 50, maybe one goes to a new writer. Competition wow. is really fierce. You must be in not just in the top 1%, but in the top 0.001%. Mm-hmm. You can get there, but the mm-hmm. only way to do that is by revising.
Mm-hmm. So you're referring to authors who are submitting their works to traditional publishers, publishing houses, correct?
Traditional publishing houses, but even if you want to self-publish, or if you're in a niche market where it makes sense for you to do a book for your particular audience, even there, you want to be the very best you possibly can be, because even there, competition is fierce.
Sure.
In the area of self-help, there's, you know, dozens and dozens of books. Why should I buy yours?
Exactly. And not only that, our credibility and respectability is on the line when you put your book out there. Of course, we want people to know about our area of expertise, but if we haven't done our job of revision, then our message is going to be lost, because errors have a way of distracting people, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. You really have to put out the best that you possibly can. And yes, spelling errors, grammar errors, those things make a difference. But more than that, just the structure of the content that you have is very important.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe the revision process? I don't know that all people understand what we mean by that.
Well, a lot of people think that what I'm talking about is spelling and punctuation, but I'm really talking about more than that. Mm-hmm. After I write a first draft, I find that there's really two manuscripts at that point. One is the manuscript that's in my head, and the other is the manuscript that is on the page, and they're not the same. What we think we wrote is not what we wrote. What you have to do at that point is match up those two. What you want in revision is you want to match up what you wrote to the vision that you actually had. And that's a difficult process. We think we do it well the first time, mm-hmm. But when we hand it to readers, they didn't quite catch it. They didn't mm-hmm. understand your points, or you lost them in some explanation. Mm-hmm. So at that point, there's two manuscripts, and I always describe revision as the process of matching up those two manuscripts, the one in your head and the one on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not the same.
They are not, and you made a good point about someone else reading your manuscript. This is why in my program I make a big point about having an editor. You have to have someone else to eventually read. I mean, obviously you want to do your best job before the editor gets it, but part of the process is exactly what you're saying, that what you think you said is what the reader is reading and matching those two. And that takes several
yes.
drafts.
What, you know, what writing does is it takes this idea or this image or the story in your head. Through the medium of words, it reproduces that exactly in the reader's head.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem is it doesn't get reproduced exactly. The part of that is the reader has different life experiences than you, and you have to anticipate some of those. So you have to know who your audience is and anticipate what are their life experiences, what can they understand, where do you have to go into depth for explanations, and where do you not. So I also say that the first draft is, if you're writing fiction, the first draft is to tell you what your story is.
Mm-hmm.
The second draft and every draft after that is to tell you the most dramatic way to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
That's two very different issues.
Mm, okay. And you know what? I would think that this is true even for nonfiction or for memoirs or
yes.
whatever. Is getting what the story is one thing, but finding the best way, the most dramatic way to tell it is another step. That's another process.
Yeah. And what you're doing there is making sure that your reader stays with you. You don't want ever have a place where the reader's interest flags.
Mm.
So people who stop and give very long explanations, a lot of narrative, they lose the reader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless there's some tie-in immediately to the rest of the information, you know, narrative can be deadly.
Yeah.
So you really have to make sure you're keeping the audience in mind.
Right, okay. And I also like what you said about the fact that we have to anticipate that the person reading this, whatever we've written, has had different experiences. And trying to anticipate that is important, because it's going to change the way you tell your story. And for example, nowadays we really have to think globally. I always tell my clients, you can't just think about you're writing for just this country or just your region. You have to think globally in terms of your story. And obviously we can't anticipate every single little filter that it's going to go through, but we
right.
certainly have to have a broader vision than maybe we did in the past. Correct?
Yes. You do have to think international market. You know, J.K. Rowling, who wrote Harry Potter, is from Great Britain,
mm-hmm.
and she has swept the world. So you have to really think of the international market. And also, that's one of the reasons I really encourage people to think about who is your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a person in mind or a range of people in mind. Because if you're going to talk about, nuclear energy,
mm-hmm.
how you would tell that to a group of nuclear scientists is very different than how you tell it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really think about who your audience is. Then you have to accept that you're not going to hit 100% of people who read your book. 90%, that's great, and 10% don't get it. Well, you did pretty well with 90%.
Yes, I would think 90% is fantastic. You brought up an important point about anticipating who your reader is or determining who your reader is, because I think one of the biggest mistakes that writers make, especially my clients who are coaches and entrepreneurs, is trying to write a book for everyone. I think when you're writing a book, it needs to be for a target. I mean, for example, the Harry Potter books you mentioned, that's for a certain audience. There's a lot of young adult fiction that's very popular right now. That's for a certain audience. So it's kind of like going through the when you flick through the channels on television looking for something that interests you, you're going to stop at the ones that resonate with you,
yes,
your interests, and the others you're going to pass up. So there's no way that one book or one TV show or one movie can really fit every single person. So I think our chances are better of getting that 90% that you mentioned. That'll be 90% of our ideal market, our ideal target.
Yes, if you say that there's an ideal market out there of 1,000 people for this book, and
mm-hmm.
you really understand those 1,000 people and you sell 900 copies to them, that's much better than trying to reach 1,000,000 people and you hit no one.
Exactly.
So the numbers are just there, yes.
Exactly. Right. Now, what is the hardest part of revision?
Oh, the hardest part is really reading what you wrote on paper, seeing that new and fresh. It's really hard to get to re-envision. I mean, that's what revision is seeing it new in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
Two things really help there. One is good feedback, and that can come from your friends and family and also from professional editors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is distance. Sometimes you don't really see what you wrote for, several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say put it in a drawer for 3 months. That's not always practical. But
no.
But distance does help.
Also, when you say distance, you're talking about letting, as some of people call it, letting it cool off, letting time pass. Yeah.
Some people say letting it cool off, time pass. That's part of it. Sometimes it also helps for me to just go work on a totally different kind of project for a while, that if I work on nonfiction for a while, and if I come back to the fiction, then I'm in a different mindset, and it just helps to be in that sort of different place when you come back and reevaluate.
Okay. Now, how will listeners get in touch with you who want to learn more about your services? Because in a moment I'm going to ask you to describe your shrunken manuscript technique, and I also want you to tell us about your retreats. So how can listeners get in touch with you who want more information?
Well, the best way is my blog at darcypattison.com. That's DarcyPattison. A lot of people think it's Patterson with an E-R. It's with an I.
Right.
And if you just look at the speaking portion, that will tell you about the retreats and Novel Metamorphosis, the book that I use for the workbook for the retreats. That's really the best way they can get it.
Okay. So everything that you do, we can reach from Darcy Pattison, PATTISON.com, and from there we can kind of click and go to where we need to go.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's great. Now, would you share your uncommon way to revise the shrunken manuscript technique? I've been looking forward to finding out what that is.
This happened because I was doing critiques for a friend many years ago, probably 15 or 20 years ago. And at the time, I was kind of poor, and I didn't have enough money to print out her manuscript. So what I did was I reduced the font. through the beauty of computers these days, you can reduce the font, you can single space instead of double space. And I did that to her manuscript, and a manuscript that was like 200 pages suddenly became 30 or 40 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, a chapter was suddenly on one page. In other words, I could start to see the structure of the overall piece. And that was amazing for me. What I try to do is to make things visual for people.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do in retreats now is I ask people to do this process. I don't even really care if you can read the manuscript at that point, as long as you kind of know what's happening in each of the chapters at that point. But what we do is we reduce the story to about 30 pages. And then we do a novel revision retreat, I have 8 different ways we analyze the shrunken manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you may mark your 5 strongest chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens a lot of times is you'll have, and we just mark it with big colored markers.
Mm-hmm.
So they just put a big X on the chapters that are the strongest.
Okay.
And then we lay it out on the floor in 3 rows of 10. So suddenly you see your novel all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So a common thing that would happen would be chapters 1, 2, and 3 are very strong, a chapter and chapter, say, 25 and 26 are very strong. And then you have the dreaded sagging middle.
Yes.
Where nothing really happens in the middle, and we're bored and we put the book down. So what you do when you start to analyze the shrunken manuscript is it gives you a visual way to see the big structure.
Mm-hmm.
One of the common problems is that anybody can write a chapter of a novel, and anybody can write an article. But when you start to put together a book, then the overall structure is essential.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very hard to see. It's hard to keep that gestalt thing in your head
mm-hmm.
all at once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to. I can put it on paper, lay it down on the floor with the shrunken manuscript, and suddenly I can see where my problems are.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I'm wondering, when you shrink your manuscript to 30 pages, or do you physically have people to reduce that font, or how do, or
yes.
how do they, okay. They just reduce the
yeah,
font to 4 30 pages.
You start by going single space instead of double space. We usually double space our manuscripts so that the editor can read it. So go to single space, then I take out any white space at the end of a chapter so it's all scrunched up together.
Okay.
And then reduce the font sometimes down to, a 6-point font, which you can't hardly read.
No.
But
right.
I don't care.
Yes, right. That's right.
And I've sort of made up this technique, so I make up all the rules, so I break rules when I want to.
That's right.
but this works up to about 40 or 50,000 word manuscript.
Wow.
And then after that, you've got to do it twice. So you'll do the first half of the manuscript and then the second half.
Wow. Now, this is amazing because I haven't heard this particular technique before, and what you're trying to get at is to see the overall structure. So when you reduce these, I assume that you can tell where the chapters are by the headings, even though you can barely read the content in the chapter, right?
Right, right.
Oh, okay. This is great.
Yeah, and then you're referring to a regular-sized manuscript. So if I tell you, if I'm asking you what are your 5 strongest chapters, then you're looking at your regular size manuscript. When you identify those, then you go to the shrunken one and mark it.
Okay. And I suppose some of the remaining steps you have involved are to to prop up and revitalize and give life to the sagging middle, correct?
Absolutely. Or whatever the problem is. Some people find out they didn't write a climax scene. There's no ending.
Oh.
That's a good revelation.
People hanging,
Yeah, and the other thing that I say in my retreats is this. I know it can be devastating to find out you have a sagging middle, but it also is freeing because now that you know where your problem lies, you can make a difference.
That's right.
One of the biggest problems in revision is not knowing where to start. So sometimes it's, you know, painful figuring out where you've done something wrong or not quite as well as you might. But it's really freeing to find out those things.
Is that why you're kind of getting at the next question I have is, why do authors sometimes stop before revision is completely done? You've alluded to it already, but would you expand on that?
Yes. When I do a novel revision retreat, I'm very aware of the psychology of writing. What we've done is take our souls, or even writing nonfiction, self-help, you've taken personal experiences, you've put them on paper, you're putting yourself out there for readers. It's very difficult. And your ego is on the line.
Yes.
very much so. So at every point, we need to be shored up whenever possible. You need encouragers at every point. But you also need to understand the process is identifying places where things don't match up to your vision and making improvements. It is a process of going, uh-oh, I did something wrong, and then having the guts and the courage to actually take that next step of fixing it. It's very, very hard. You know, I'm in the process right now myself. I just got a critique yesterday, and, you know, it was very hard not to be depressed last night. I'll just tell you, it's hard.
Yeah.
But you have to have the courage to take that next step and actually do something about it. And that first step is just finding out, uh-oh, I know nothing about dialogue. Or, uh-oh, I don't know how to, you know, outline a nonfiction book. You know, just saying that to yourself, there's tons of help out there.
Sure, sure.
There is.
Yeah.
You can go
sure.
find it.
Yes.
Plenty
yes.
of places to get help on dialogue. But if
That's
you don't
right.
know you need help on dialogue, you won't go look for it.
That's right. That's right. And are you,
so one of the things I like to do, though, is to encourage people at every step.
Yes. Okay. That's so important. And I want to emphasize that what you just said about help, trying to go it alone is absolutely unnecessary and ridiculous when there is so much help, either in the form of like your retreat. I offer coaching. There's free information online as well. There's workshops. There's all kinds of events and activities and books on helping you with all of these things we just mentioned, outlining, you mentioned dialogue. There's help, and trying to go it alone is just doesn't make sense. So I urge
right. And there are great organizations also. The one thing
that's
you didn't
true.
Mention is
oh,
is
that's right.
For children's writers, I write mostly for children. The Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, the scbwi.org, is wonderful. But there are organizations for mystery writers, for historical writers. I've seen some for biography writers, nonfiction writers. Look for an organization, local or regional, that you can go to some of their conferences and meet up with other people who are having similar experiences. I think it's really important to be around other people who are, you know, experiencing some of the same discouragements you are. They will probably have different solutions for solving the problems in their manuscripts, but it's the emotional connections that you need as much as anything.
Right. And thank you for mentioning the associations. I appreciate that, because you just made the case for why we need the associations. You meet other people, and one of the things that happens, the first thing that happens, is you find out you're not alone and you're not the only one having problems with this process, with the whole writing process. And I think that in itself is very encouraging and comforting. And then the other thing is, even though they will have different approaches, each person has different approaches, but nevertheless, you're going to find your way by interacting and connecting with other people, I believe. So you're so
yes.
right. Thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, or you'll find someone who has an idea you hadn't thought of, like my shrunken manuscript technique.
Right,
you know,
right.
That may not be a technique you're familiar with, and there are, I'm sure, dozens of other ways out there to look at the overall structure of the novel. I know there's a lot of people who do spreadsheet plotting, so they use a spreadsheet to lay things out. So there's a lot of options, and just talking to other people, you will find those options, and one of those will be your path also.
Right, right. When I run across your site, one of the things that fascinated me was your novel revision retreat. Would you describe briefly how that retreat works and how people benefit?
Yes, it is a whole manuscript critique. I think one of the hardest things to find is someone who can look at an entire novel. Mm-hmm. A lot of people can critique a chapter. And then again, it's not so hard to write a chapter. Mm-hmm. But to write a novel is difficult. So in order to come, you must have a complete draft of a novel.
Okay.
Then you exchange that novel with three other people who will read your novel. So when you come to the retreat, three other people have read your entire novel.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go through the exercises on revising character, plot, language, all of those sorts of things. And at each point, then, you do an exercise, and then you do a group activity where you discuss your manuscript and the others in turn for that particular aspect.
Okay.
So by the end, you've gone through your novel really well with three other people who've read your entire thing. That's an amazing thing to get. You can't hardly find that anywhere.
No, you can't. That's why I was really intrigued by this. How many days is the retreat?
Well, I wish it could be a whole week, but no one can take the time or money to do that. So it usually starts Friday afternoon and finishes Sunday at noon.
Okay,
so a weekend.
So it's a weekend. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And I suppose that they're held different places around the country, and we can find out where
someone
those are.
Someone has to step up and decide they want to do it in their region.
Mm-hmm.
All of the retreats I have for the rest of 2012 are full. Only 20 people can come to a retreat.
Okay.
We keep it small and intense, but I'm willing to talk to anybody about 2013.
Oh, great. So someone would have to have interest to have it come to their region, and then
yes.
You would talk to them about the logistics of where and...
Absolutely.
Of course,
yes,
start
what's required
promoting.
And
right.
How to get it set up. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. I was really intrigued by that. And... the people who come all need to be novelists. Have you ever had anyone attend who had a nonfiction manuscript, or do you keep this strictly at fiction?
Not for this retreat. I mean, I do teach nonfiction, and I teach picture books. I teach a lot of a wide range of things, but this retreat particularly is for fiction novels.
Mm.
And I'll let you define that. If you write for third grade, that's fine. If you write for adults, that's fine. However you define it.
Okay. So for those of us who are nonfiction writers, we can get help from you, and we can find out about that by going to your website, correct?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Okay, that's great. I'm going to tell the listeners your website again is www.Darcy, D-A-R-C-Y, Pattison, PATTISON.com. And I want to urge listeners who are writing novels to for sure consider your novel revision retreat for next year, but also to just take a look around your site and see the other things that are possible. This is great. This has been very helpful. Do you have any closing words for the listeners before we sign off today?
Well, just a word of encouragement. You're not alone. It's it's a hard business we do, but we do it because we love it, don't we?
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you so much. I want to urge listeners to share what you've learned with your family, your colleagues, and remember that a recording of the episode will be here on the show page at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, where you can return at any time to hear it. Today's show was brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can go over there now at any moment you like. And the product, by the way, 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success, is downloadable. You get instant download of a workbook and a 90-minute audio narration. I'm inviting you to join me again next Monday, April 9th at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Today we're celebrating the start of our fourth year on the air, and this promises to be another exciting and informative year, so I hope you'll join me. This is Flora Brown coming to you from Anaheim, California. Thank you, Darcy, very much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And I'm encouraging all of you, thank you, for I encourage all of you to have a blessed week. And as I always say at the end of my shows, remember to color your life happy.
Color, color your life happy.
Color.
Color your life happy.